This episode of Guns Blazing is brought to you by the people at 3Chi. 3Chi is the industry leader in Delta-8 THC products. Delta-8 is a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you an amazing buzz and a great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. So go to 3Chi.com to shop for Delta-8 edibles like cookies and gummies, or to shop for vapes, tinctures, gummies, and oils that can be used to make your own homemade edibles. Use code GUNS21, G-U-N-S, the numbers 21, at checkout to receive 5% off your order. That's code GUNS21 at checkout to receive 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase.
Some years ago, a crack commando comedy unit were given jobs above their pay grade. These men promptly were put on leave and escaped to an underground podcast stackade in an unknown location. Today, still unwanted by big media, they survive as comics of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and you can find them, you can listen to Guns Blazing.
What's awesome about us, Sean, individually, among the other attributes that are blatantly obvious, is we have some funny ass fucking dudes we know, some funny ass friends,
hustler ass dudes,
I don't know if you have ever met Dave Williamson, but America is about to meet Dave on a whole fucking tour called America Meet Dave, spelled M-E-A-T. I'm sure you've seen it on social media. You've probably seen this guy at a comedy club near you at some point, or you have seen him on tour with Bert Kreischer. I don't know any of those things, but he's here today and we feel fucking pretty good about it. So Dave, welcome, brother.
Hey boys, good to see you, man. I miss you guys so much, dude. But yeah, there's nothing like a good pun in a tour name, right? So my podcast is called Meet Dave, M-E-A-T Dave, you know, with the pun intended. But now the tour is America Meet Dave, because I'm hitting the road and I cannot wait to put this vaccination to test.
Dude, all right, so let's start off the bat, because this is a fucking incredible idea for a tour. I mean, because I've been keeping tabs on your podcast, so it's just perfect. So go ahead and describe what your podcast is about and this whole fucking tour that sprang off of it.
Well, you know, so in comedy, like, people are always looking for their niche, right? And, you know, the three of us, we've been around long enough. We've seen a lot of really bad ones, and we've seen a lot of great ones. And totally unintentionally, I've seemed to have found one here, because, you know, I got really heavy into barbecue culture about 6 or 7 years ago, man. It's just, I loved eating good barbecue when I was on the road. And when I came back to LA and they didn't have any good spots around here, I got disappointed. I would get mad. We'd go to a barbecue restaurant here and my wife would be like, why do you keep coming if it's going to upset you? And I'd be like, I don't know. It just upsets me. I like keep wanting to give these people chances. And I order the food and it's like gobbled in barbecue sauce. So they're hiding the fact that the food's not good. And I'm like, why go through the trouble of opening up a barbecue restaurant if you're just going to do it half-ass? Like, why don't you open up a pizza restaurant or something that's a lot easier if that's the route you want to go, you know? So I just got mad one day and I told my wife, I'm teaching myself. So I bought a cheap smoker from Home Depot and was terrible. I mean, I didn't even know where to put the wood. I literally put the wood chips in the grill part where it's supposed to go over in the firebox. Yeah. I was like, oh, the flavor from the wood just hits it.
You did. You said fuck the rule. The instructions all together.
You know, like in Good Will Hunting, Dead Poets Society, when he makes them rip up the book, you know, and he's like, he's going to free will it. I kind of did that with barbecue, but it was a bad decision.
That's a wild move, because those smokers.
I quickly learned that I should just dive into YouTube and podcasts and books. So luckily these days, there's a lot of resources out there, man. So I went on and I learned, and I got pretty good at it and graduated up to the point where I have a 900-pound smoker in my front yard here in Los Angeles. And two smaller smokers right next to it, and a Santa Maria grill right next to that. And I cook for parties. I invite comics over before the pandemic. Would just have big meet and greets. Uh-huh. And it just kind of became a little bit of a brand for me. And all anyone wanted to do was talk barbecue with me. So I said, I might as well start a podcast. I didn't have a podcast at the time. And there was 1,000 comedy podcasts out there, and I was like, I can't make one better than the ones that are already out there. So I did a barbecue podcast.
It's fucking great, dude. I mean, it suits you so well for some reason. I just assumed like your dad was a butcher or some shit. But then I remembered, it's like, no, his dad was in the car business, like down in Miami, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I grew up in the car business and then made the switch to doing comedy full time. But, you know, that's what's been a cool lesson too, man, is that you're never too old to learn something new as long as you're passionate about it. I mean, I got good at it because I literally was smoking meat like 4 times a week. And my wife's like, why are you like, we're not going to eat it that often. And I'm like, well, the neighbors are loving it. You know, like I was passing it out, and you just got to do trial by error. You know, it's like, there's no substitute for just doing it. Once again, just like comedy, you know, you gotta just have those pilot hours, you know? Yeah. I think what really helped my learning curve was that since I didn't have a background in it, I was humble enough to ask people for help. Mm-hmm. And so I really was willing to be a student. Whereas I think, I mean, you know, the car business, I grew up playing water polo, like other things like that, that I have a background in. Sometimes you get to a point where you're embarrassed to learn, you know, because you should already know things, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So with barbecue, I had no ego. I was just so eager. When places started popping up here in town, like pop-up guys and brick and mortars that ended up being really good, now we have a good scene here, I had no problem going and being like, hey, man, can I just like help you today and learn? And everyone's cool about teaching.
That's fucking badass. Sean did that. Like he trained under a chef when he was putting together his $20 chef show. So, by the way, you guys got to collab on something at some point.
We've talked about it.
I love the schedule you put together there. Like, how's the format of the show going to go? Like, at these tours, because you got a sweet ass list of cities lined up.
And I've only posted a fraction of them so far. So basically, what happened was I got my vaccination shots a little earlier than everyone because I coach water polo, so I got in with the teachers, and I was like, man, I know I got some stuff coming up in August with Bert, but I'm like, I don't have anything between now and then. I'm like, I want to get on the road, and so I had this one barbecue pitmaster guy who owns some spots in Memphis on my podcast, and he's like, dude, you should come to the Memphis in May. It's the Super Bowl of barbecue festivals. You know, all the guys that you know and have been on your podcast are going to be here. He's like, you're going to have a blast if you come. And a lot of people have been telling me that. So I'm like, shit, man, I really want to go to this festival, but I got to figure out a way to make it, you know, work, write it off as work. So I'm like, maybe I could put a few shows together. And he goes, you could do a show at my restaurant. And I go, cool. So I hit up a couple other buddies in the area and they're like, oh, that sounds awesome. So then I threw it up on Instagram and people started hitting me up like, come do my town, come do my nice. Restaurant. So next thing I know, I had 2 months booked up. So then I got Bear Mountain's always been really cool. They make barbecue pellets if you have pellet grills. Mm-hmm. So they caught wind of it and were like, how could we sponsor this or support you? Because they're always so supportive of everything I do. And so I got them involved and it's just been a whirlwind, man. So now I bought a travel trailer. I'm trying to get it wrapped. And I got two kids that just graduated from film school coming with me to shoot the whole thing.
Nice.
And I'm adding stops every day, man.
This is the best, dude. This is the best. I mean, what, you're gonna go to cool ass fucking barbecue joints, which is just cool in and of itself. If your thing was just traveling around and eating at cool ass barbecue spots, I'd be like, you're fucking living the dream. But now you get to throw comedy shows and you got sponsors behind it. Good for you, brother.
Let me ask you this. Yeah, like, obviously, you know, when we're doing our own thing and coming up before you actually step into the world of like a monster headliner, doesn't it motivate you in like watching the behind the scenes of one of the biggest machines, like not a pun there, but
I got you guys know, on the puns the, now.
Yeah. You know, like one of the largest, you know, comedy machines just from the backside, like it makes you like, oh yeah. Like you want to fucking do just even go harder. Right.
100%, man. And it's been a true blessing to be able to go and do a lot of these, a lot of this touring with Bert. Not only just, you know, because it's great work and it's fun times, but just to watch how Bert works, you know? Mm-hmm. And what was cool too is that, you know, I did, you know, a handful of weekends with him before he started doing the theaters too. I was lucky enough to be one of a few guys that would go with him and do clubs. And, just to see the transition too, to see him grow from a club act to a theater act and his podcasting and all that kind of stuff. Motivating is definitely the word for it.
Yeah.
And you know what's cool too, man, is that Bert's the kind of guy who appreciates it every step of the way, and he doesn't take any of it for granted, and he doesn't rest on his laurels at all. If he's supposed to do a radio interview and his shows are already sold out, since he committed to do that radio interview, he goes and does the radio interview, you know? When fans are expecting a meet and greet, he does a meet and greet because he knows it means a lot to him, man. You know, it's like the whole sports analogy when was it Jordan or somebody who said, like, yeah, I could take the night off, but there's some fan out there who this is the first time they ever saw me play, and it's a big deal to them. So Bert totally has that mentality, man. And his fans, I mean, that's why he's got the fans he does, is because he's super authentic in those connections, you know, apart from being a great comic.
It's badass, brother. You're coaching water polo. Like, is that because one of your boys is into water polo now?
I played water polo. I started playing I played every sport in the world for at least 1 year, right? Uh-huh. Wrestling, football, golf, tennis. I played everything. And I loved playing sports and being on teams, but I never truly got passionate about something until I played water polo my senior year of high school. And then I went and played at Auburn University, and it just it meant so much to me, man. So I just always wanted to give back to the sport and be able to create those opportunities that I had to make friends and to learn life lessons through team sports and give that to kids, because there's not enough good coaches out there in the world, man. So, you know, it's something that's, you know, easy for me to do. I have no aspiration of being an Olympic coach or anything, but I love the opportunity. And right now, like, I'm an assistant coach at the high school by my house because I just don't have the time to run a program properly. But I know with my experience and my life experiences, I could be a great assistant coach to, you know, recognize when a kid's struggling with something, or know when this kid over here needs to have a little bit more fun, when that kid needs to be pushed a little harder, to text the kid at the right time and be like, hey, man, you know, well, I was just thinking about, you know, your test that you told me you had, you know, things like that, where it's more about the life than it is the sport, but the sport is the connection point. A lot like comedy is our connection point with fans, a lot like barbecue is our connection point with, you know, with a whole community of people. Barbecue community is dope as shit, dude. They're really badass people.
I can't imagine. I mean, it's just a bunch of people like to throw drinks back, have a good time. I mean, there's not one person who's interested in barbecuing that isn't the life of the fucking party. It just comes with it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you're the guy that runs the grill, you're the guy everybody wants to hang out with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. That's how you get to run the grill.
Go ahead, Todd.
It's cool enough when, like, the guy running the grill is doing steaks and burgers, like that. That's a nice enough gesture. But when you know that pit master or that grill master didn't sleep the night before because he was doing a 14-hour brisket for you and didn't want to screw it up, that's a whole nother level of TLC that you taste in that food when you show up at 3 p.m. to eat that dude's barbecue. You know, he really put in some time. And I'm sure Sean's got some comparable things in the stuff he likes to cook where you're like, this is a little bit extra.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a feeling of the effort of when you have to start, when you're getting up at 5 a.m. and you're like, oh, fuck, I got to go out there and do this. But, but that show, what I enjoyed about that barbecue show on Netflix, I forgot, it was the one, you know, where they go to all the different barbecue styles around the world. It's on Netflix. They have like the old lady in Texas that does it all old school, just coals.
Yeah, Chef's Table.
Yeah, Chef's Table Barbecue. Yeah. That's it.
That's Rosie. Yeah, that's Rosie, dude. She's incredible. It was her birthday the other day. She's like 86.
Really?
That level of science and like love and just connection. If you haven't seen Chef's Table Barbecue, you're missing out. That is an unreal show. All the episodes, the dude in Australia. Yep. I mean, that shit is, I mean, I've watched it when it first came out, and I've only, you know, I've every once in a while when I'm just chilling, I'll watch some episodes, but I'm telling you, you got to watch. That's right there. And again, you know what it is? Just like motivation. You got these people that are absolutely, they've been doing it for 65 years and they're just, they make the most incredible meat. And then I'm like, well, fuck, you know, it's like Jordan. It's like when you're a little kid, you just want to be like Jordan. It's the same thing.
Bro, yeah. I get sexually excited about fucking barbecue. I mean, literally, like, yeah. There's nothing better than when you go to a place that does it right. Mm-hmm. Like, we ran through Alabama, and we found this little Rich Reagan's and I comic. We were leaving Sylacauga, Alabama. On the way out, there's this little bitty bump in the road called Oak Grove, and there's just a Shell station off this highway. And we were like, oh, man, we should have ate back there. I don't even know what's between here and where we're going in Birmingham. But we were starving. And in the Shell station, there was a little food truck. And there was this, oh, that's black dude out there just freaking working it, man.
No, that's going to be good.
And I was like, we're stopping here. And he was so cool, too. He had two old beat up lawn chairs. And he's like, hey, come over here. Just sit behind the grill. So we sat under his little overhead tent thing and watched him go to work. And then he was cooking, he kept cutting off little pieces. And then he put it between his spatula and his big old fork thing, and he'd flick it at us. You had to catch it. Yeah. And try. It was amazing. It was like out in the middle of nowhere, dude. Like, I get sexually excited about it.
So my barbecue setup's in my front yard because like my backyard would be too hard to get my big smoker back there. Mm-hmm. And the first week of the pandemic, I had a deck that I built for it, but I wanted something a little bit more substantial. One, because, you know, it'd just be cool to have. Two, so that during the pandemic, when I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to probably lean into doing a lot of like content out here. I need a nicer looking backdrop, you know? Uh-huh. So my son and I threw it up on Facebook before we started recording. We were talking about the when you can use social networking or social media for good, not evil, right? This was totally one of those times. I put it up on my neighborhood Facebook page and I needed lumber. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of money to drop on it. Well, between like fences that people were tearing down and projects that they were doing and had extra stuff, and the brewery told me to come get some pallets, right? I got all this wood, and then I bought a couple pieces that were specific pieces I needed at Home Depot for like $200. So for $200, me and my 10-year-old sat on my front yard and built a barbecue shack. And nice. That thing brings me so much joy. Not only did I book a commercial from it, because I did a Philadelphia cream cheese commercial in my front yard. They love the look of the shack and me in front of it baking a cheesecake in my front yard, right? Nice. Not only that, but I used it for my own content. And I sit in a hammock in my front yard, and that thing just brings me so much joy. Whereas I live in a 2-1 in LA, and everyone knows how hard it is to afford anything out here in LA. It doesn't bother me that I have to share a bathroom with my whole family members. I sit in my hammock with my bistro lights going to my barbecue shack, and it just makes me feel like I live in a mansion. You know what I mean?
Is that on your Instagram? I want to see this.
Somewhere. If not, I'll send you a picture. Yeah, it's definitely on there somewhere. But the cool thing about it being in my front yard too is, like you said, people, I live right next to a park. So there's people walking down my street all the time, walking their dogs or going to take a run in the park. So when I'm cooking, man, people are walking by, and people are always, it's nice to have that connection point where they're like, what are you cooking? And I talk, and the best is when they time it right, when I'm pulling something out and I can slice it, and I have a long, this is the move. It's kind of dramatic. I mean, I could just hand it to them, but it's more dramatic. You take your long slicing knife and you put the little bite on the end, and then you like reach out over the wall and they can just take the little nibble off the end. And oh man, that's nice. A great moment. I enjoy watching people eat my barbecue more than I enjoy eating my barbecue these days, you know?
That's how I feel the exact same way when I cook on a grill or just barbecuing. When I have a brisket and I have it all, you know, it's all rested and it's done its thing in the, you know, in the butcher paper, the cooler.
Yeah.
You got to pull it out. And then, you know, after the perfect amount of time rested, you cut it up to peep the smoke rings. You got to like, oh, man. It's like comedy, bro. You could bomb. You could bomb with barbecue, dude.
Yeah, 100%.
And the smoke ring, the flavor, the tenderness, the, you know, how hard, how well is it coming apart? Is it juicy? I mean, there's just so much, and it's, oh man, it really is artwork.
No matter how good or how many times you've done it, when there it is.
Nah, nice, dude. That's badass.
There it is, and I have now I have a much bigger smoker under it, and I have a neon light in the back that I bought from a Jimmy John's that went out of business by me. It says free smells. And I got my bistro lights coming off it. Yeah, it's dope, man. I love it.
Dang.
That's real cool.
What a setup.
So to answer your question from earlier too, man, you're asking me about the format of the tour. So my plan is to do 45 minutes to an hour of stand-up, Some cities I'll have an opener. Some I'll just roll up there and just, you know, start cold. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then the last 20 or 30 minutes, whatever restaurant I'm at, I'm going to bring the owner or pit master up and we'll do like a 20-minute Q&A with me, him, and the audience. So it'll kind of be like a live version of my podcast, but with audience questions, you know?
Yeah.
So that way people can hear their story of opening the restaurant. People can ask like, oh, what makes your brisket so great? And we can have a little interaction. I'm really excited about that, man.
Yeah, integrating the staff. That's what I'm taught. You know, and with the educational purposes, you know, and that's just nice. And just fucking wrapping it up with that is beautiful.
Well, it's built-in promotion for them, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to have, I'm assuming, some content film there that's going out.
And, yeah.
You know, so it's a win-win for everybody, and everybody gets to go there and fucking enjoy some. I'm going to say above average comedy and then some awesome barbecue.
I hope so, man. A lot of new stuff I'm going to be working out. I haven't done headline sets on a regular basis in over a year.
Oh, I bet. But dude, you've been headlining forever. Like Jesus Christ, you're a monster. Like you were always one of those guys where I'm like, you know, there's some certain people that can kill in any room. Like you were, it didn't matter. It had to be a clean show, you know, whatever. It could be in a rowdy bar, whatever. I've never seen you not crush.
Oh,
like
thank you.
You're one of those guys. So, I don't know. Like you got this, you had this perfect dad vibe. Like, yeah, I look like a guy that could get up and beat your ass, but also I'm just this lovable freaking dad. You know, it was a good mixture.
Well, I think that that's what makes the barbecue a natural fit too, man. That, you know, my comedy's been about being a dad because, you know, you always talk about what's going on in your life and that's that's my vibe. So the barbecue is a natural fit with the dad stuff, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did not know. So you were on a Division I water polo team?
Well, it's a little tricky. So at Auburn, in the Southeast in general, they didn't have, it's a D1 school, but it wasn't a sanctioned sport. So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
So we were designated a club sport. Uh-huh. So we had a nice facility cause the swim team was winning national championships and we played organized games in a league, the same league that organizes the D1, games, but we were, lower sanctioned, but yeah, I don't know, man. I always wonder, like, at what level I could have gone and played if I had started earlier in life or come from somewhere that was more of a hotbed. But in some ways, man, I'm really grateful for my path because, I mean, going to Auburn was one of the best things for me in my life. I met my wife there and just have great friends from there. It was an awesome college experience. So if I had really wanted to play D1 water polo or was able to at that point, I wouldn't have ended up at Auburn. I would have ended up out in the West Coast or the Northeast somewhere. Yeah. And then also too, man, I also think that, you know, I probably am able to make more of an impact on the world as a coach than I ever would have been as a higher level water polo player. And maybe I would have gotten burned out on the sport if I had played at a higher level, you know? And now when I see these kids, you know, bringing it back to the Jordan analogies that seem to keep finding their way in here. You know, like when people play like at that level, sometimes they don't make good coaches because they don't remember what it feels like to not be good, you know? Mm-hmm, whereas yeah. I totally remember like being a senior and still learning stuff in college. So I feel like that makes me good at relating to kids who are just starting out as freshmen, sophomores playing the sport, you know?
So did you know? Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, can you still swim really good with your lower body and shit? Like when you're at a pool, can you like have half your body out of the water? Like just got some techniques to do that?
So it depends on the situation because like if the three of us jumped in a pool and we're messing around, like I brought a water polo ball on a tour with us. Uh-huh. We were messing around playing in the hotel pools and stuff, right? and lakes or whatever we could find. And so there I still feel like a superstar. But if I get in and play Masters polo with the guys in my community who all graduated from USC and are 10 years younger than me, I'm like, dude, I'm like, shit, man, I'm the weakest link in the pool right now. Like, it's been a long time since I felt like the weakest link, but I'm definitely it.
How do they say who fools are sitting on the bench? Like, if you ride the bench on the water polo, like, what do people say? Is it still say the bench?
Yeah, because we do have a bench. We legit have a bench up on the side of the pool that you get.
Yeah, you just jump in when it's go time, right? You
saw, yeah, I didn't know. Just okay, jump in the pool. I didn't know where the that other players
You're riding the gutter.
So as a 21 year old dude, I mean, incredible stamina to play water polo, a great swimmer. Here's my question. What kind of Navy SEAL do you think you'd have made?
Dude, I think about that all the time.
Because that's the hardest part. That's usually what weeds people out.
I think about, because I grew up also, even though I didn't end up playing polo till later in high school, I grew up spearfishing. I grew up on a lake, and literally for fun, what I would do is I would tie a rope to a rock and I'd jump in and go to the bottom of the lake and I'd see how long I could stay down. I mean, that was like fun to me, you know? I grew up wakeboarding and windsurfing and all that shit, man. So like, I always wonder about that, what kind of a Navy SEAL I would have made. I have a really good breast support still to this day. Oh. I mean, there was a point I could free dive with just a snorkel and fins. I could go down 80 feet and grab sand from the bottom and come up. I could shoot a group. I could shoot a grouper with a Hawaiian sling in like 40, 45 feet, you know?
Holy fuck.
So I could still do that today, but the difference is I better shoot it, stone it, and bring it up on one breath, because I ain't going to be able to go down and work it if it gets rocked up in a hole.
You have the goddamn barbecue Chuck Norris.
I am not familiar with this spearfishing at all, but those terms you were just throwing out sound awesome. So tell me the process of, you know, from start to finish. You see a fish, what happens?
All right. So we go, I would go with my family. I was an only child, and me and my mom and dad would go every summer to the Bahamas. We'd spend weeks over there, right? So here's the process. My dad would take us, he'd go to an area where he knew, you know, he had numbers in the GPS, or just, you know, just spotting by eye, going out and seeing the topography of the, oh, this might be a good, you know, rock spot, reef, whatever. Throw the ski rope out the back of the boat. And then I'd have a Hawaiian sling, which, so a lot of guys shoot spear guns, which is like the big thick bands, and you have a trigger. Uh-huh. So, and then you could shoot like big fish with that and like reel them in, basically, you know. We do it. It's like the difference of shooting a rifle versus a bow and arrow.
Okay.
So a Hawaiian sling, I just use, it's just a metal stainless steel shaft with a wooden handle and one rubber band on it. So it's like a bow and arrow, kind of like this, you're shooting it. Uh-huh. And then if that fish is too big and he takes off with your shaft, it's gone, man. You got to either track him like you would like a shooting a deer with an arrow. Like, you got to track him till you find what hole he hold up in, and then you got to try to work him out of the hole as he's wounded and dying, you know?
Oh my God.
And you got to do it all before all the blood hits the water enough to where sharks start coming around. Right. So I'd hang on to the ski rope, right? And my dad would just idle through the area, and you'd be looking, and either you get lucky enough where you see a fish kind of cruising by. And if you see the fish cruising by, you let go of the rope. And my dad knows to kill the engine when that happens, so the engine doesn't spook the fish. And then I start doing my breast support as I keep my eye on the fish, because if they sense danger, a lot of them have the ability to disappear really fast, either motoring away or they change colors or they blend into the surroundings. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching, you make sure I got my thing ready. Now, back in the day, I didn't worry about this, but now I flap my GoPro on real fast.
An extra step.
And then, and then I go, and if it's a hog snapper, you come straight down on top of him, right? If it's a grouper, you come 20 feet away from him, and you try to come up along the sea fans or the rock and surprise him and pop him in the face, right, or the head. And then you put a spear in him, and one of two things happens. Either you stone him, so the second you hit him, they go, and then you just pick him up and go up. Or they go, and they motor off somewhere. and then that cloud of smoke, that as they take off, you got to follow the smoke and figure out what hole they got holed up in. And there. Now, the other thing, too, is lobster. You do a lot of lobstering in the Bahamas. So same thing. You tow on the rope, and when you see a cave that looks like it might have enough relief that a lobster might go on in there, you go down. And my move is I always go upside down. So I go upside down. I would grab the rock and come up like this. And then you sit there for a second and let your eyes adjust. When your eyes adjust, you can look into the cave and you see if there's any lobsters up in there.
You just reach in and grab them?
Well, in the United States, you have to either net them or tickle them out or grab them. In the Bahamas, you're allowed to shoot them with a sling.
Really?
Yeah.
Are lobsters fast?
If they, so they're blind. So they could barely see. So they have the tentacles. That's what that is. That's their feelers. So if they see you, it's just a big blob to them. So they think you might be a threat. So they actually come towards you. And then if you touch their antler, their tail shoots them backwards. So they go backwards up into the cave really far, and you ain't going to get them, right? So, but if you can kind of like tickle them out, like reach in and tickle them, then they'll just slowly come out and you can shoot them in the open. So they're not fast unless you give them a reason to be fast. Then they're gone.
Jeez, I hope you feel good about yourself, Dave, hunting the blind, slow crustacean of the sea.
They're delicious, Todd.
They are delicious. I love them. Dude, that's fucking crazy. What? So you just grew up. This is what you guys did.
It's what I did, man. It was really, for me, it was one of the main ways I connected with my dad, because my dad wasn't like a big he's not the kind of guy you throw the football. He wasn't a big like sports guy, you know, but he was an outdoorsman. Yeah. So, and for me, my dad was a very smart, he's a very smart guy. He's very high, you know, intelligence with a lot of different things. So for me, like spearfishing from an early age and being very good at it, it was one of the few things where I really felt like my dad cherished my opinion, you know?
Uh-huh.
So we were a real team in that sense. He knew the numbers and he knew the how to drive the boat expertly. And I'd be in the water giving him my input of what I see there. He'd tell me what he sees up there. Sometimes we'd be in the water together and it's like we had a grouper like hold up in a rock and we're using teamwork to kind of, you know, how are we going to attack this grouper or this situation? So for me, it was a real connection point with my father.
He had the perfect kid. Like, it's, you know, your mom gave birth to Aquaman. You could hold your breath for like 2 days. Amazing swimmer. He's like, I just had the perfect kid because I love to go spearfishing, but I like to drive the boat. It's great.
I think it was a very positive shift in my father's quality of life when he realized, because my mom's a great diver too. So it got to the point where my dad could just drink Budweiser's in the boat and me and my mom are towing on the ski roads getting dinner back there. And he's like, oh, I got to drive the boat, you know?
What are your boys up to right now?
Well, so my older son's playing water polo and soccer. He's 13 now. So he's going to be at the high school next year. I'm going to coach him next year, which is crazy to me.
Nice.
And my younger son, he played water polo for a little bit, but he decided he wasn't in it. And I don't want to be – I tell him, you got to try stuff. I make them try stuff, but I'm never going to be the kind of dad that forces them to do something just because I like it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I give him shit about it. But, you know, I want him to do his own thing, you know? So it's funny. I have different connection points with my kids because my older son and I, we connect over sports. We love watching football together, basketball. And then, you know, I coach him and take him places to do his sports and we throw the football in the park. My younger son, we connect where he likes to build shit. He loves to build stuff with tools. He's been mowing my lawn since he was 8. I'm not even kidding. He's just like, he gets tired of waiting for me. He'll put on the safety goggles. He was like a 7 and 8 year old. There was safety goggles and my weed whacker. Just he loves that stuff. So he loves making Home Depot trips with me. He likes to cook. My older son won't eat my meat, you know, but my younger son will eat all of the meat and he loves how I'll be cooking stuff. So it's funny. Nice. I have different connection points with both of them.
Man, that's crazy. I remember when you were toting your family around the country in that RV.
You know, that was the best, dude. That was such a risk. When we moved from Miami to LA, what you're talking about is, I booked up 3 months of work and my wife and I decided that we would get this travel trailer, which is 3 times bigger than the one I got right now. Mm-hmm. And I booked up work and I was like, well, we're just going to go together as a family. And then we'll end up in LA and that'll be our move to LA. And it was supposed to be a 3-month trip. And we ended up doing it for a year and a half. And we were just having so much fun and it was working so well that she just homeschooled them and we just kept going, you know? So that was maybe the best time of my life. And you know, what's funny is it seems to like that life keeps like reinventing itself for me because there's so many similarities, yet it's so different between that trip I took with my family that was epic versus touring in the tour bus with Bert and the gang that goes with him versus this thing I'm about to do now in the trailer. It's like they're all kind of have the same feels, but completely different in certain ways, you know?
Yeah.
What's your favorite part? Sean was on Fluffy's tour, so he's tour bus for several years. So you guys compare notes on it. What's your favorite part about it? Other than, I guess, the camaraderie, because he's got obviously got great comics and good people.
Yeah.
But
yeah, camaraderie is unbelievable. The food, like the food is even whether they get it to, you know, if it's delivered or you always go to the restaurant before or after the show, there's always something good, just like delicious. And and a lot of it, you know, fools fighting over who orders the most appetizers and shit.
Dude, 100% on that.
The food and this, like the drinks you learn about and the food you get to see on four nights straight, different place, different major market, you know, every week, four markets, 16 monster markets. You get to eat the food real quick, all in a month, that type of shit. That's, I think, is one of my favorites.
And yeah, the eating and drinking is definitely up there for me too. I mean, like you said, not only the stuff we like make it a point to like, oh, this place is a world famous Mexican restaurant, we got to get it while we're there.
So
it's not only just buying the food, but also obviously the fans like send food to us. So, you know, we luck into a lot, and breweries just drop beer off, and they know when I'm there, they drop off rubs and beef jerky and you know, Bert, you know, obviously fits that brand too, where everyone's like dropping off hot sauces. And so we just end up with a collection of just so much fun stuff while we're, and then I bring a smoker with me, and I cook a lot, especially during the pandemic. So we didn't have to go out to restaurants. Yeah. So I have a travel smoker, and dude, we'll post up at like outside the venue, and I'll be out on the loading dock of the theater, and we'll set up a brisket and let it go overnight, you know, or we'll roll into town. I'll set my alarm for 7 a.m. and go out there, set up the smoker, get it all rubbed and put it on the smoker, and then I'll go back to bed and wake up at noon and check it, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect.
But, you know, I would say, apart from the obvious thing of the shows themselves, one of my favorite things is the camaraderie, but not just like shooting the shit on the bus and telling stories or whatever, but the fact that Bert's the kind of guy who likes to do activities. One, just because he's that guy. Two, because we shoot it for content, so we can write off doing it, you know, we can make it make sense. So we just do so much fun shit, man, with go-kart racing, and we take tours of haunted, you know, courtrooms, and, you know, just anything that's like, we did a float trip down the Rio Grande, you know, like just random electronic surfboards, just any silly event. And then we're all out there just laughing because we all know each other so well. Like, we know who's going to, like, excel at certain things, you know, that we rent a pontoon boat and load up a cooler of beer. It's like college all over again, where you're like sneaking beers out and going for the day, and, you know?
Yeah. That's pretty much living the dream right there.
Yeah. I mean, Christ. I mean, of all people to get to tour with, Bert Kreischer, probably the most fun human on the face of the planet. I mean, for the Travel Channel guy who blew the fuck up, but never lost that Travel Channel guy anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Damn, dude. Well, I'm super stoked for you. I can't wait for you to come on your tour through Indy. We'll find you a great barbecue place. Sean, that's our mission. We got to find the perfect setup in Indy.
The best barbecue spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, my criteria has been, I just tell people I want to go somewhere where they're excited to have me. Like, that's it, man. Like, I don't care if they can only safely hold 30 people or if they can hold 300 people. I got both kinds of places on the map. I just want it to be where the barbecue restaurant's like, hey, man, we're stoked for this. I don't want to, like, take away from their normal food sales. I want to add to their food sales, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some places are really looking forward to it. It's hopefully giving them a boost in business. Some places are making the tickets super affordable, because most places it includes a barbecue plate, you know? Mm-hmm. So some of them are like, we don't even care about making money on this. We just want to have a cool event to say thank you for our customers for sticking with us through the pandemic and supporting us, you know?
So
there's a lot of different ways that we're putting this together to make sense from venue to venue. You know, I just want to, like I said, I don't care if it's 30 people or 300. I just want to do shows and see people and make content and just connect with people out on the road again.
Dude, I feel like what a time for all that to kick off, because you kind of got to cheat the pandemic a little bit for a guy who was living in California, you know what I mean? Because you had that safe way to tour.
Yep.
And still do what you love to do with people you love to be with, while everybody else in the industry is just like, I'm not allowed to leave my house.
Bro, I don't take it for granted for one second. I mean, first of all, I took the pandemic very seriously.
Sure.
For no other reason for my kids, right? Like, I just wanted them, I wanted everyone to get back to where my kids could play soccer games and hang out with their friends again. So I'm like, dude, I don't care if I got to wear 7 masks. I'll do it because we just need to get there as fast as possible. I don't want my kid to be a junior in high school and all of a sudden things are just starting to feel normal, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, I had no problem taking it serious, but I was super lucky to be in situations to do things to keep my mental health and to keep my productivity going while still staying safe. So like the Burt's thing was perfect. We did drive-in movie theaters. We had our bubble in the tour bus. Nobody broke protocol. We all really showed a lot of respect for each other. So many fans were like, Burt, please just one picture, screaming from the railings. And I know it broke Burt's heart because he likes to go over and do anything the fans ask him. But he's like, I got to stay 10 feet away from you. He's like, do a selfie and I'll be in the background. And he would sit there and do that for people, you know? And so, super lucky that I got to tour and we figured that out and we were able to go and do a lot of shows during the pandemic. I figured the Zoom thing out pretty early. I did a lot of corporate shows and a lot of online Zoom shows. My neighbor's a camera guy. So we set up, he didn't have any work. So we set up a studio in his garage and I was just doing auditions and doing Zoom shows and stuff in his garage. And broadcasting live from my barbecue shack in the front and podcasting. I have a water polo podcast and a barbecue podcast. So I feel super lucky, man, that I was able to stay busy during the pandemic.
What auditions you've been doing? Like, how's that going?
I mean, it's good. I love auditioning on Zoom and auditioning at home. The worst is driving across, it's 2 hours to get to Hollywood and rush hour in LA. And then they like you so much, they want to bring you back 2 days later for, so now you've driven there 2 days, spent money on gas, got a parking ticket one day, and you don't book the role ever, you know? So it's like, I'd much rather just throw it on film, but if I don't get it, I don't get it. Who cares, you know?
Yeah.
But the one that I booked was with Philadelphia Cream Cheese, like I brought up before, and it was like in the heart of the stay-at-home order, right? It was like April or something, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the first audition I got, and it was people who were kind of like characters who were going to smoke a cheese – or no, we're going to bake a cheesecake for the first time ever, and it all was happening during the pandemic. So they were going to book eight spots, all with different people in each spot. So since I already had the camera set up in my front yard for one of my barbecue live streams, I asked my buddy JR, I go, hey, man, could you just tape this? I got to do an audition. So since I was already in front of my barbecue shack, I go, hey, I'm Dave. I don't bake. I smoke meat and I could smoke a cheesecake, you know, and I sent that to him and they loved it. They rewrote the spot for barbecue guy and I booked it. And then since all the, it was crazy too, the way they did it, like it was such an eye-opening thing from the new world is they just mailed me 2 hard-sided suitcases, which had all the recording equipment in it. And then the director, the set guy, the wardrobe people were all on Zoom and they were just directing it from home, right?
Really?
So yeah, it was crazy. So, and they had a PA drop off some like the ingredients and some props to me. Just left it on my doorstep and took off. And everyone else's spot was indoors. Mine was the only one that was outdoors. So there were some extra audio and light challenges. So since JR was kind of in my bubble of doing all my production stuff already, I got them to hire him to do production. And so he got a paycheck out of it. And then my kids were in it, so they got paid as extras. So 4 people on my street got a paycheck from that one commercial thanks to me building my barbecue shack.
How was the cheesecake? Was it good?
Dude, actually, it was pretty great. It was really good. Did it in a cast iron skillet. Followed the instructions, threw it in there. Came out, had a cool color because of the smoke around the outside a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really taste the smokiness, to be honest. And then dribbled some fruit on it. Came out killer, man.
No kidding.
That's beautiful, dude. Oh.
Yeah, you could see it looked pretty. You could see a picture of that on my Instagram somewhere too.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to check it out. We'll got to share it. We'll share it on our page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, how about your kids getting loot for the for extras?
Yeah, they loved it. They would have. My kids started their own. So I don't know if you guys know Al Jackson, but Al Jackson's kid, you know, he's a funny comic. He lives in Denver now because he's doing this Daily Blast Live show.
Right.
Al Jackson's kid lives next door to us because my kids and his kids are best friends. So Al's kids at my house like every day. They all started their own YouTube channel during COVID. So Al's kid and my two kids, they do sketches like every day, and it cracks me up. For Christmas, the only thing my kids wanted was a dummy, like a crash test dummy, so that they could like throw it off the roof for their sketches and stuff, you know. So I'm online trying to look up like dolls, human dolls, and just all these sex dolls are coming up, and I'm like, I might have to buy my kids a sex doll and just tell them it's like a
two for one. Yeah.
So luckily my wife found like an actual dummy that made sense, but
oh man.
Well, yeah, it's Coco Productions, they call it. COCO Productions. It's hilarious, man. They put us to shame, man. You know how we're supposed to put content out every day or whatever? That's kind of what you're supposed to. And my kids actually do it. I'm like, you guys are making me look bad, bro.
Yeah, no kidding. God, what if it takes off? You can just be like agent dad, you know?
I'll manage you guys. Yeah, let's do that. I'll you guys go on the road. I'm staying home.
Right, right.
Oh, man, you know, it's when I had a girlfriend, I was like 21 or something, you know, and we went with her family to something, and she had these little nephews or something, cousins. And this is in like 2000, maybe 2001. They had MacBooks with it could have been 2000. They had MacBooks with fucking iMovie on it, and they were wakeboarding and editing their shit. And that was in like 2001, bro.
Yeah.
Wow. They were cutting clips.
Well, that's the most impressive part about it, man. My older son does all the editing. And
really?
Yeah, and he's getting to the point now where I'm like, I might need to start getting you to edit stuff for me, man. That's like the hardest thing, to find a good editor.
Yeah,
and so my other son, who's the one who's really into, you know, engineering or whatever, I'm like, man, I need to teach him how to fly a drone. And then if I get one of them flying a drone and the other one editing, I'm like, I'm on my own little team.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's a dream.
That'd be perfect.
And then it'll come full circle to where then they'll go on the road with me in a travel trailer, you know, and it'll just be like when we did it when they were kids, only now I put them to work.
That's great.
My kid's super talented in all those fields too, but I made the mistake of introducing him to my rich friend, and now he works for him. So
I remember that story.
Yeah, now he's launching YouTube. The guy, he's just become an absolute savage.
He's like, Dad, you get 20 views on your video. We're getting 4 million. I get it.
No, it's a blessing and a curse, man. I wholeheartedly believe that I would be mega famous if all this social media was around when I was in high school, because I would have figured it out back then and leaned into it hard. But, you know, when you're a little bit, I mean, when I was in my 20s, we were all figuring out MySpace and it didn't make sense to me. I was already past the curve, you know?
Right.
But I think it's a blessing, though, man, because, you know, the path that I've taken, man, and where I'm at and where I hope to be going soon, like, I just so much appreciation for the substance of it, you know, where I don't know if I had been I totally would have been that guy that if I became a YouTube star or an Instagram like star when I was 22, I would have just been a douche. Like, you know, I would have never like come out of that, you know, I'd be washed up by now instead of still having fun trying to, you know, further my journey.
Dude, my parents would have kicked me out of the fucking house by 12. I was already an asshole kid, hard to handle. Yeah. Like if I had a way to film myself constantly and put it out on the internet, Christ, I used to scare the shit out of my mom and nobody was watching. I just loved doing it.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine what she'd have gone through if I could show it to thousands of people?
Yeah. On
TikTok,
for sure.
Just fucking with your mom.
Oh, dude. Because I would fuck with her endlessly. I would have been famous probably just for fucking with my mom. Like, I did it way before Bam did it or any of that. Like, I just loved to scare the fuck out of my mom. It was just my shit. I could have had my own channel just built off of it.
Check this out. Let me see if I can find this and show you guys. Somewhere down here. Here you go. I have a couple of these. This is all mini eights, right? videos, all from college. So when I was in college, man, I had my dad's old camcorder, and I think I invented the first GoPro because we had the underwater casing for it from when we go spearfishing and stuff. So I would put it in the underwater casing. I had a flashlight duct taped to the top of it. And then the hand strap, I invented this like extra strap so I could wrap my hand so I wouldn't lose it in Mardi Gras when I was hammered, you know? And everyone just knew me. I'd be the camcorder guy at all the college parties and all our road trips and everything. And I just have hours of just footage of nonsense of us just partying. And part of my I have it out here because I was going to go through it all during the pandemic, and I didn't make it very far. There's some of like my very first open mics on here. Somewhere I have an audition for when I auditioned for The Real World when I was like in junior in college. I'm like, if I find that, it's over, dude. I know. I remember the dumb shit I said on that.
I got one. I don't know what this is. It's a FC8M, bro. That's like a set within my first year when I thought I was going to right fucking rocket right through Hollywood, bro.
Yeah, that's always what we all think, right? You crush.
They ain't
first
ready
time,
for
right?
me over there, bro. They ain't ready. Yeah. I'm about to take that town by storm, bro.
Yeah, yeah. You write your own bio, and the first line's always like, "He's taking the industry by storm, ripping up stages from east to west coast." You did two open mics. Pump your brakes, bro.
you did a set for your cousins and a few aunts. When you went back home. Yeah, man.
You got to go through it, though, man. It's just like I said.
You got it.
It's like I said, man, where I'm appreciative of my water polo journey. I'm also appreciative of my comedy journey, man. And, you know, the ironic thing is I would see all these people that had niches and like, you know, whatever their thing was, where I was like, man, you know, there's not a lot of niches for a 40-year-old straight white dude these days, you know? Uh-huh. And I accidentally found mine that I'm very passionate about and is authentic. And so, you know.
That's great, dude. That's great. Yeah, dude. You should also think about a show built around being a 40-year-old white dude. I mean, it's good.
It's every show in the 80s, isn't it?
It's a throwback.
Yeah. Coming back like bell bottoms.
Yeah. Everybody loves Dave.
If this was a podcast in 92, we'd all be talking about our successful sitcoms.
My buddy James used to tell me about podcasts in 06, bro. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude.
What is it, man?
Is it it's a radio? I should have just started one.
Yeah.
Right?
I've been like podcast number 7.
Dude, I was doing a podcast pretty early. We started one at Morty's pretty early, and I forget exactly when it was. Maybe 2010, 2011. So it was still pretty early.
Yeah.
But I was doing it. I had no idea what I was doing. I just like taught myself. So I was putting it out through iWeb on my fucking on my Mac.
Yeah.
And it was going nowhere. Like it wouldn't go to all the platforms or whatever. I figured out how to get it to one, I think. And so I was like, we ran it for like 2 years before I even learned that, you can just put it on Libsyn or something and it'll just go everywhere on its own. I was like a fucking idiot. Just wasted, other than training on microphones, it was a total waste of time.
No, but it's just like, it's part learning, of the, man. Yeah, it's part of the trial and error, right? Like, I it's so funny. I get the like Facebook memories and they like pop things pop up, you know? And so that trip that you talked about, Todd, where I was, you know, traveling with my family in a travel trailer, doing comedy across the country for a year and a half, going to comedy festivals and doing weekends and one nighters on Wednesday. And then a weekend I had to get to here. We had a tire blew out and we got to get the tire fixed so I can get there in time. So all this cool stuff. Right. And then going over the border and them wanting to search us and, you know, all this stuff. So when we were doing all that, I'm putting it up on Facebook or whatever. Then now I get the Facebook memories and it's like 3 likes. And I'm like, how did that only get 3 likes back then? Like, this was great shit. You know what I mean?
I felt that same shit.
Yeah. But it's like people just weren't like on social media like they are now, you know, like they didn't, it was a different world, but I would have never figured it out if it wasn't for those times, you know?
Oh yeah. Chris Bowers and I played a game once. We went back through all my old tweets of like 2014 or 2015 or whatever, and we picked like all my best ones, and they'd have like one like, two likes, whatever, and then we reposted them. This was like
copy and paste
a year and a half ago, and then we just copy and paste and put them out now and see what they did. It was fucking hysterical, dude.
Yeah.
And like, for one, I'm like, I was way better at fucking tweeting jokes back then than I am now, because I was purely relying on the words back then.
Yeah. You know? So nothing makes me happier than when I'm either, let's say I'm drunk and I comment on something and I see it the next day or a day later, or something I posted and then see it years later, so I don't remember it, you know, whatever.
Right.
But when I see it and it makes me laugh, and then I realized it was something I wrote, and I go, oh shit, that was a good joke. I go, I didn't even know it was me. I go, man, I need to have three beers and get on social media more often.
That's great. Well, thanks for hanging out, brother.
Yeah,
I'm really happy for you. Everybody listening, make sure you follow Dave. What's all your handles?
So my Instagram is where I'm the most active. That's at Dave W Comedy. It's the same handle at Twitter. And then obviously I got a Facebook page and fan page and all that stuff. And then my website is DaveWilliamsonComedy.com. That's where all the tour dates for this tour are. I'm going to be coming through. The ones that are up for sale right now are San Diego, Phoenix, Memphis, Boston, Bakersfield, Grand Junction, Colorado, Denver, Colorado. I'm going to be adding Birmingham soon. I got Fort Worth, Texas in the books already, Cleveland. And then I'm going to be adding a lot more Georgia and the Carolinas and Mississippi and a couple others along the way. So please either come out to a show, guys. This is going to kick off May 6th, and then it wraps up fittingly on 4th of July, when everyone will be nestling into their own barbecues at their house. And I will be selling, I got my own rub coming out, an all-purpose rub. So I got to get some to you guys. Yeah. And so I'll be selling that rub all along the way too. So hopefully I can't wait for people to buy my rub. And then on 4th of July, all the messages I'm going to be getting of people telling me whether they liked it or critiquing it or whatever, that's going to be a ton of fun. And the rub is already on pre-sale at my website, DaveWilliamsonComedy.com as well.
Nice work, homie. Brother. Appreciate you for coming out, man.
Yeah.
Talking to you.
I've always appreciated you guys, not just as coworkers, but as friends, man. You guys are the best.
Yeah, you're the best. Thanks.
You are.
Come back soon.
You got it, man. Let's find a place so I can come do a show there and we can hang out.
Perfect. Yes, sir.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.